Hi, I'm Terry Meekin. Welcome to Roving Report. Christopher Cockerell, hovercraft. Barnes Wallace, bouncing bomb. Sir Frank Whittle, inventor of the jet engine. And joining this famous lineup of British engineers is Alan Bond, the designer and creator of a reusable British space shuttle. Alan's engines will also take you on a flight from England to Australia in 4.5 hours. So I went to see Alan deep in the Oxfordshire countryside at Reaction Engines, and I asked him first to tell us about the British space effort today.
We've been making progress quietly on developing new propulsion, new enabling technologies, which could completely transform this whole business of what we have in space.
You actually developed a single-stage engine with unique components in, which enables a reusable shuttle using a single-stage engine.
Absolutely.
And so, that's unique in the world at the moment, because the Americans have dropped out with the space shuttle.
We first of all stumbled onto these technologies back in the 1980s, but unfortunately, I have to use the word, political dogma got in the way. We had a thing called HOTL. Had we stuck with that, then we would actually be 20 years further on.
But HOTL was fundamentally flawed in its design, because you're putting the rocket engines at the back and the centre of gravity moved when it took off.
As a technical detail, that's absolutely true, but you've got to bear in mind that our current Skylon vehicle grew out of the HOTL technology. That fundamental design issue would have been found very quickly. In fact, we were on the verge of finding it, which is why when the project finished, Reaction Engines was able to reconfigure HOTL. I often sort of regard Skylon as HOTL in a different overcoat. It's all of the same sort of fundamental principles, of course.
So they threw the baby out with the bathwater, you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. With the 20 years of research we've done since then, we've moved on quite a long way. Right. But nonetheless, the first of those vehicles could now be in operational service. And the knock-on effects of that are that the space services industry, which is making use of the applications, would now be a lot further down those routes, and we would all be feeling the benefit of it.
So the public need to know through this broadcast that you've actually got a power pack in stage one of maybe 5 or 6 stages before it actually gets attached to an airframe, the very first one, which has now been proven to work and operate along the manner that you wanted to.
What we have is a design for a very, very powerful engine, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, aerospace engines ever conceived. Various parts of the technology of that have had to undergo development. We deliberately designed the engine to capitalise on as much existing rocket and jet engine technology as possible. But nonetheless, you can't get away with everything. There are some new things that we've had to do. And we've spent the past few years consolidating those technologies. We're now in the position where all of the relevant technologies for this engine exist. We've shown that not only do they exist, but they're extremely practical. So,
but you've built a demonstrator, I believe.
We've built some demonstration technology in form of extremely powerful, lightweight heat exchangers. A heat exchanger that can move as much heat as a nuclear power station heat exchanger, but only having the weight of something weighing a ton or so in weight. With these engines, they have this big cooler in front of them. Otherwise, they don't look very different from a jet engine. As the engine accelerates up past the speed of Mach 2.5, then the cooler starts to remove the heat from the air, and so it keeps the inlet temperature to the engine very cold, about minus 150 degrees C. And by cooling the air to that, all sorts of things that you can do on the engineering of the engine become possible, including stitching the rocket engine and the jet engine into a single power plant.
So this is a unique part that you've brought to the existing technology.
Correct.
Is to be able to suck the air up.
That's right.
Almost instantaneously.
Yes.
And make use of that technology as a single power pack.
Now, we've done many, many studies on that now. We've also built a lot of equipment and hardware. We know all this is possible. And the European Space Agency, engaged by the British government back in 2010, had a close look at that, and they agree with us that this is a route forward. So the technology is not going to be easy. It never is. Even if you designed a new jet engine today and built it, you'd always have problems. And we don't anticipate that. I'm not going to give the impression this is easy peasy, you just do it. It will take a lot of clever engineers quite a number of years to bring all this about. But the important thing is There is no new physics. There's no showstoppers in the way of all
so
of that.
So it's a question of manufacturing it to the tolerances and the degree which needs to
be... We can do all of that. The real question is now, how do we get the funding into it? That's the one single question in, you know, in almost anything that we ever do in Britain, is how do I find the money to do it?
So how much money do you need at this point in time in order to get an engine attached to an aircraft?
Well,
in its simplest form.
The actual total cost of the programme is about £10 billion over a period of about 10 years. It's only the same sort of level of money that it takes to develop any new aircraft. In terms of capital projects, we need about £360 million to go from where we stand today to getting a full prototype engine actually onto a testbed and up and running. That would probably increase the spending of the economy by over £1 billion.
And can't you get this investment from private sources, or has it got to come from government? Is it going to be matched one for one?
What we have found so far is that small amounts of government money do a great deal in terms of raising cash. So at the present time, our current programme, which has been some several tens of millions, only 15% of that has come from government and institutions. 85% of that has been private investment.
I mean, are some of these investors people like British Aerospace, for instance? I mean,
these are mainly private individuals. We have some institutional investors, but I do want to emphasise that in Britain that we should all be proud of the fact that we've got some extremely astute and very bold people capable of taking risks with technology. However, the next stage is very large for British investors. America is very fortunate. It's got a number of very wealthy individuals that can do this sort of thing. In the UK, even our wealthy individuals are not really in the same category as the American ones. The UK government has put £60 million already towards the coming programme. And so the task that we've now got is to find the remaining part of the money to take us to a full £360 million development programme. So the government has bought into the project. It will come together, there's no question in my mind about that. There are too many people who have got strong interest, but bringing all this about, getting all this coordinated, getting the funding sorted, these are sort of major
It's as much tasks. Effort to put the money in as it is to build the engine.
Oh, it's far more effort. I would estimate that over the last 30 years, 70% of my time has gone into raising
funding. And 30% fighting the politicians, so that 2% for the engine build.
I've always said that I would praise the UK when it actually decided it was going to support these sort of things, and I have to praise the UK Space Agency, and I have to praise now a succession of ministers, Lord Drayson and David Willetts in particular. They have been very, very supportive.
Is this business totally critical on yourself now, or is it a business which runs if you weren't here?
This business will run if I'm not here, and indeed in the not too distant future, since I'm racking up the years, then that will have to be the case. But I'm pleased to say that we've got over 60 people in Reaction Engines now, and I have absolutely no qualms that that would be the case.
They know where they're going in the vision, they know what they have to do.
They understand the technology, they understand all the background to it. It's not just that they know what they're doing, they have deep understanding of this type of propulsion system and all of the problems involved in it.
So, and the problems are getting the money. You've got other people who are out there doing the...
We've now got professional people involved in the fundraising, so I don't have to do as much as that myself, although I still get involved very much in the negotiations.
Perhaps we could just describe exactly how this thing would operate.
We don't want to see two or three Skylons and then a company which launches four satellites a year. We want to see commercial operators competing with one another for the business. Maybe, I don't know, 13 operators at the moment worldwide operating Skylon vehicles in competition with one another. So they would buy their Skylons or lease them, and then out of the transport profits, they would pay for those and pay for...
So Skylon, for the listener's sake, is the British space shuttle. Using your engines as a propulsion system.
It's a very sleek, rather sexy-looking, fast aeroplane in configuration. Mm. But the important thing is it takes off like an aeroplane, flies into space, does a job, comes back, and then a couple of days later it can do it again. Now, it has to operate from a spaceport. In order to get to all of the different kinds of orbits, a spaceport near the equator, very near the equator, is the best thing to have. But that could be built commercially. Airports these days are built commercially.
It's not rocket science to
call it. No, it's not rocket science. And indeed, the whole object of this project is to try to bring access to space within the normal economic framework. We don't want to be always beholding to the nearest friendly government that's prepared to pay for the launch costs.
We've got the space vehicle, which is basically using your Sabre engine, and then we've got a son of Sabre called Scimitar, which you would attach to a similar airframe, but you would use it for terrestrial flights between continents.
That's correct. If you've only got to fly up to the Mach 5 and then cruise at that condition, as you say, between Europe and Asia, for example, then you can leave out a lot of the complication that goes with the rocket side of the engine. One of the important features of this vehicle is that it could leave Brussels Airport in a morning, get to Sydney, be turned around and be back at Brussels in the evening before the airport closed. A couple of decades or so's time, the possibility of getting anywhere in the world in 4 hours is absolutely on the cards.
And this based on the work you're doing now.
Precisely.
So using your propulsion unit, forget about the fact we've got to get the money's there now. We are going to see a British designed and built space launch. What year are we talking about?
I'd like to feel that we're going to pull it off before 2025. In round numbers, it's about 10 years, give or take 6 months. Oddly enough, there is a huge demand for the space plane. Current rockets for getting into space are really not adequate, and people want to get away from that. They need new technology there. If we introduce something like Skylon into operation and make it as easy to get into space as it is for, say, a trip to Paris, then even with my imagination, I believe we cannot see what the ultimate end product of all of that would be. It will lead to changes in the way that we live, the changes in the way that we work, the changes in the way that we get our materials, and indeed, ultimately, of course, off-Earth communities living. So that's something that moves into the realm of speculation and science fiction. But the important thing is we are taking the genuine first steps of that today.
You've been listening to Roving Report, where this week we've been at Reaction Engines. Roving Report is a Terry Meekin production.